Welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
And Hannah, you're not going to guess the wine tonight. You're already staring at the wine bottle.
I'm staring.
There's no way you're going to connect it to either the Great Wall or a cure for wellness.
And yet you insist there is a connection.
Well, you might have to follow me down the rabbit hole a little bit.
So after I last week brought you the very forthcoming 50 Shades of Grey wine, you choose this Mencia from Spain, and I honestly am not sure what the connection is, but if I had to guess, I would say you would probably have figured out some way to connect it to a cure for wellness.
Well, we're drinking a 2014 Luna Bebierde. In Spanish, do you know what that means in Spanish? It means moon drinkers.
Uh-huh.
Meaning hydration.
Okay. Oh, and water and cure for wellness.
This wine was raised entirely in stainless steel and bottled without filtration. Stainless steel, huh? I think you'll see the connection to that later.
Okay, maybe.
I think you already see the connection.
I think it is a stretch.
Well, let me describe this wine.
Please do.
It's very dark. It's red and dark berry scents when you smell it, with suggestions of white pepper and licorice. White pepper and licorice.
Hmm.
It's juicy and tightly focused on entry, then fleshier mid-palate.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't see that either. It offers sappy blackberry, bitter cherry, and lavender flavors, and finishes with a firm grip, chewy tannins, very good length, leaving a subtle floral quality behind.
You lost me at sappy. But yeah, I actually think that my wine last week was better. But
it was. This one's a.
This is not bad,
but this is a
dry
challenge. Like, this is as hard to decipher as a cure for wellness, is what we'll talk about. But first, I would like to talk about a polarizing, controversial film, which shouldn't be controversial. We'll talk about that why. It's The Great Wall in Asia, in China, in northern China, where the Great Wall is. Who do you think of? Matt Damon. Matt Damon is climbing the wall, fighting telepathic dragons. Before we get into the controversy and why this is lighting up Twitter, what was your gut feeling about The Great Wall?
My gut feeling about The Great Wall is that it was mediocre. Just a mediocre mediocre action-adventure monster movie that if you didn't have Matt Damon, it would sort of just be one of these, like a Chinese B-movie. So Matt Damon kind of saved it for me, I think, and I just found it to be okay. It's 3D, it's really cool to see the wall, and Matt Damon becomes sort of your typical Matt Damon about 20 minutes into this movie, and then it becomes somewhat formulaic, and I felt that it was only about 100 minutes long, and it felt longer to me.
It did have a saggy middle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's directed by a man named Yimou Zhang. Western audiences know him because in 2002, he was nominated for an Oscar for Best Foreign Film for Hero, a gorgeous film. 2004, he was nominated for another Oscar for House of Flying Daggers for Best Cinematography, gorgeous film. And now he's back with Matt Damon. Now, some people are saying this is a film set in China, set on the most famous wall in the entire world, the Great Wall. However, the guy on the movie poster is Matt Damon, looking like the white savior. So they immediately say whitewashing. Whitewashing is when you take an original character, usually Asian, like that was lobbed around last year for Doctor Strange and the Tilda Swinton character, and they replace it with a white man or white woman. And I don't think whitewashing is correct in this because it's... the character is not originally Asian. It's about a stranger in a strange land. It's about an outsider. Maybe he's from Ireland. I don't know. His accent is all over the place.
It's a little bit Irish, a little bit English, a little bit American. I don't know what that was supposed to be.
Matt Damon's a mercenary, and he spends time telling people, I grew up on the battlefield. I was an orphan. I fought for food. I fought for money. I fought for women. That's what we do in my continent. The strong take what they want. Contrast that with China. There is no individual. The army fights as one, as a collective. So you have West versus East philosophies here. And so it's not whitewashing. It wouldn't work as another Chinese guy from, like, the neighboring town. who goes to the wall to he's there to steal. He wants to steal the secret of black powder, which is this, it's like gunpowder, but it would have it would change European battlefields, because they don't have gunpowder yet. They have swords and bows and arrows. So the Chinese military is technologically superior and logistically superior and just better looking than anything Matt Damon has ever seen. So the other accusation is pandering. You're pandering, and I don't think so. Pandering was Transformers Age of Extinction, which took place a little bit over there in Hong Kong or southern China, had a throwaway character played by Li Bingbing, if you remember her, and praised the Beijing central government. They will come help defeat the Decepticons because they're the central government. That was pandering, Michael Bay. This is actually reverse pandering. Mm-hmm. This is pandering to American audiences. If Matt Damon, you're right, if Matt Damon was not in this movie, it would not make $14 million like it's going to make this weekend.
Nobody would see it.
It would be all in Mandarin with all and with Chinese people that you don't really know, and no one would go see it. You need an international star for this, and this is a co-production. It's a co-production, which we're going to see a lot more of, between China and Hollywood. The most expensive film ever made in China, $150 million. It opened there in mid-December, made a whole ton of money, and it won't make as much money here, but it will at least make some money. Because Americans can identify with it, they have a way in.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you that both those controversies I felt were a little contrived and overblown. And the director made a point of saying early on that this was not a character that was ever prescribed to be an Asian character. So it's not that Matt Damon took the place of some other ethnicity for this character. The story really is that you have this Westerner who's been captured by this Imperial Army force, and he ends up fighting alongside them to fight these monster creatures that show up every 60 years and save the world. And so it is not like Matt Damon's character is the total savior. He's working with this sort of interesting array of Chinese soldiers, and the commander's a woman. She's like a kick-ass commander. And so most of the characters surrounding him, are heroes in their own right. They have, they sacrifice and have honor. And so I think it actually does a service to both Western and Eastern. And I think Matt Damon does make this movie accessible to the average person beyond outside of China. And I wish the movie had been better as a whole. Like, the story is really where it kind of fell flat for me.
You mentioned the female commander. While Matt Damon is the big face of the film, I think the breakout star is her, Commander Lin, played by a lady named Tian Jing. She's got screen presence. She's just fascinating to watch. And she's one of she starts out as one of the blue people. The people in the Chinese army are defined, their roles are defined by the color they wear. The archers wear red. The catapult people wear yellow. The standard infantry wear black. And she wears blue. And I'm not going to tell you what they do, but their role in the army is something else. I wouldn't want that job.
That's right. They're a little bit, they got a little bit of Cirque du Soleil going on the wall there.
And so she was wonderful to watch. I look forward to seeing her again. I hope she is able to cross the ocean and to do more accessible English films. You mentioned the monsters in the film. They look like cartoons. Little cartoon dragons. They're telepathic dragons. So the queen controls these thousands of little dragon minions by this little thing that vibrates on her head. And yeah, they're little cartoons. And the story of why they're there is they're punishment from heaven. To punish man's greed, to keep man's greed in check.
Where did you even get that? I watched this movie and I was like, I have no idea.
I think they said that. Like, this is this. They came down. They were sent down from heaven into this mountain. And every 60 years they come out to keep man's greed in check. Because apparently you cannot defeat the dragons with a group of individuals fighting with swords. You need an army working together. Hence the propaganda, the superiority of the Chinese model. The collective. Matt Damon learns his lesson. He comes in as just a selfish man with attitude problems. And then, this is not an original theme. Many outsiders have joined armies before, and he has transformed. His worldview has changed because of this newfound way of fighting, and he embraces it. No, it's not a great movie, but it's not a terrible movie. I had campy fun. I usually hate 3D. It worked. It's a gorgeous looking film. Arrows shoot by your eyes. Axes fly across the screen. It's bookended by two battles. Those battles are great to watch, especially the first one. First one's the highlight, the climax of the movie's in the first half hour. And there's a dead solid wait in the middle.
Very.
And they take a dig, the Chinese at least, take a dig at the Emperor. So back in the day, they threw over the Imperial Order and became, embraced communism, and now they're the collective. And they take a dig at the Emperor. He's very weak. He's very effeminate.
And it's
reminding Chinese audiences, it's a good thing we got rid of an Emperor, right? I mean, look at this guy. So it's serving Chinese purposes. It's serving American purposes. It's not terrible.
It's not terrible. So that's not exactly a ringing endorsement. But I think after some of the other movies that I saw in the past week or so, this one sort of gradually managed to move its way up the chain a little bit. I still would not recommend this movie above catching up with some of the other movies that are still out there, like the Oscar contenders that are really worth seeing, that are good movies. This is just an okay movie. Granted, it kind of needs to be seen on a big screen. It's not something that you're not going to be able to translate the great visuals of the Great Wall.
It's a good looking wall
on a small screen. And I've been there. It's really cool. And so I was curious to see whether or not they'd really be able to capture that expanse that you really witness when you're standing on this on a portion of this just insane structure. And this movie takes place, it's important to note that it takes place like 1,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to be this epic period piece in addition to this action adventure monster movie. So maybe in a way it tries to be too many things. And so the monster portion of it just seems a little bizarre. And I'm sorry, but Matt Damon just can't be gritty, hard as he may try. It's like this movie opens and you see Matt Damon with like long hair and looking really scruffy. And within 15 minutes, he's cleaned up. He's got his hair back in a ponytail. And you start recognizing that self-deprecating smile and the just the typical Matt Damon. You know he's going to end up as a guy with a good heart. And so it's hard not to like Matt Damon. So as much as I didn't necessarily like the movie as a whole, I think he actually saves this movie and will make it a little more entertaining for the average person.
Because Matt Damon is a likable and bankable international star. Mm-hmm. People probably thought, you know, they were reminded of Jason Bourne fighting on top of the Great Wall.
Right.
I want to read my favorite quote, my tweet about this movie that I saw today. The Great Wall is kind of like Split, because Matt Damon deploys 24 different variations of an Irish accent seemingly at random.
It's so sad,
that's,
but true.
That's brilliant.
Because it really was incredibly noticeable. Whatever accent he was trying to affect in the early part of the movie was completely gone by the end. And in the middle, it was some bizarre hybrid. So it was a little distracting and totally noticeable. And I don't know who his dialect coach was for this movie, but hopefully they're not hired again.
Well, compared to our next film, The Great Wall is a walk in the park. It's a stroll. It's English 101.
It's good.
Our next film is challenging. It's like a meaty steak. You gotta chew on it. It's a complex wine. There's flavors
steak.
All over the place.
It's a steak you're likely to choke on.
It's called The Cure for Wellness. And it's directed by a guy I would not think would be the director, Gore Verbinski. The first three Pirates of the Caribbean films are Gore Verbinski. He won an animated Oscar for Rango. He was the guy behind Rango. He did the first The Ring. We just talked about Rings 2 weeks ago. He did the first Ring, you know, the only good one. He was also, unfortunately, the guy behind Johnny Depp as the Lone Ranger.
That's right.
So he's had his ups and downs. He's been all over the map. He embraces different genres. And this is a psychological thriller. It's in your head, it's in your mind, and it has you asking, what is real? Is what I'm seeing right now real? And for 2.5 hours,
very long,
2.5 hours.
Long 2.5 hours.
You really have to, you get tired of asking, I don't know if what I'm seeing right now is really there. However, I want to start out with a pro. So last week we had Lego Movie 2, 50 Shades 2, John Wick 2. This is not a sequel. This is not a prequel. This is not a franchise. This is not adapted from a novel. This is not a remake of a 1933 film. This is original script, and you just don't... It's so rare nowadays to see that, especially in the past 2 months. I feel like this is the first original thing to come down the line, so I'm thankful of that. I've never seen it before. Ever.
And I liked all those twos you just mentioned better than
you like
this
50 Shades
movie.
2 better than Here for
I definitely... Yes, yes. Because I didn't sit there in the middle of 50 Shades 2 going... Oh my goodness, when is this movie going to end? I didn't. And A Cure for Wellness is way too long. Just way too long.
All right. I get it. It's long. It's, you're not allowed to say that until we wrap it up now.
It's torturous.
I get it.
It's torturous. And it's weird. And it's gross. And the last half hour is downright icky. Icky.
It's worth discussion on the way out of the theater. To set it up. High-powered Wall Street financial CEO needs a break. They are all overstressed. They're all overworked. So he goes to, I guess it's Switzerland, to take the water, to get the cure, take 2 weeks off. And he doesn't come home. He sends a letter back. It's like more like a manifesto saying, I've seen the error of my ways. I was greedy and the folly of man's quest to be superior to other men. I'm never coming back. The board does not take kindly to that. So they launch young Lockhart, played by Dane DeHaan. I love Dane DeHaan in Chronicle, in The Place Beyond the Pines. Most people probably know him as the Green Goblin.
Green Goblin, yes.
From the second franchise of Spider-Man. So he's great. And he's this cutthroat, will stab anyone in the back to climb up another rung on the professional ladder. They send him to Switzerland, bring back the CEO, or don't come back. So he goes there, and immediately, something's wrong at the Vollmer Institute, Hannah. Something is wrong here. He talks to patients, he talks to staff, and everyone always ends with, but nobody ever leaves here, Hannah. Nobody ever leaves here. Have some water.
It's like the Roach Motel. Checks get, you know, you check in, but you don't check out. Because there's poison! The hotel.
It's strange. Everyone goes there for the cure. They're all wearing these white robes and they're playing croquet. But Lockhart notices they seem to be getting sicker. Like, no one's getting better, but they all say they feel great and they never want to leave. But they actually appear to be getting worse, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very strange. So he has a mystery to solve. CEO says, no, I'm not coming home. He gets in a car accident. A very realistic, brutal, graphic car accident involving an elk. And he shatters his leg, full leg cast, all the way up to his hip. He is immobile. So the head doctor, Dr. Vollmer, played by Jason Isaacs, standard villain guy. Remember, he was a villain in The Patriot. He was Lucius Malfoy in the Harry Potter series. He's a standard villain. Mm-hmm. But you don't know if he's a villain here. Is he a villain, keeping everybody there, making them sicker? Or has he recognized all of these global industry elite people do have a disease? They're all overstressed, and I'm going to make them better. So Lockhart has a mystery to solve, and if this film had the editor it deserved, they would have cut a half hour of fat, because there is a juicy middle. The mystery is good. There's a backstory, there's a history. A baron used to own the place a couple hundred years ago. He conducted strange experiments. What's going on with the water? Why am I seeing eels? Are the eels real?
Yeah.
Honest to God, Hannah, are the eels real?
I have absolutely no idea. It's like there were eels in the toilet. There were eels in the hot tub. I'm not sure. And it was just, as I said, it was just icky. And the whole point of Lockhart breaking his leg is that he then ends up essentially becoming a patient at this spa. So he's there. And so he's there for the duration. And so it becomes this mystery. And then there's another Hannah. I said the other day that, you know, I said last week how there seems to be a Hannah now in all these movies. And they're usually just these characters that I'm like, it's really weird to hear your name called throughout these movies. And in this one, there is this very strange teenager.
The most interesting patient Lockhart comes across is a girl decades younger than anybody else. And I don't know what her age is. I guessed 18.
No, she'd have to be younger based on certain things that happened that I'm not going to give away.
But things could have delayed that.
I know, but so, I'm thinking she was supposed to be early, mid-teens.
I could be convinced she was younger than 18. But, so here's my, I have a trivia question for you. And I would love to see if you know this answer. Because the answer, yes. If you don't know, it will shock you. Hannah is played by an actress named Mia Goth. Uh-huh. So I think she's about to get a lot bigger now. This is like her first really big role. Who is Mia Goth married to?
She's married?
Who's her husband?
She looks so young. I have no idea.
Shia LaBeouf.
Really?
Is married to Mia Goth.
Really? Shia LaBeouf. She is older than I thought. Maybe she actually was supposed to be about 18. That would take a little bit of the ick factor away,
I suppose. Looks like a ghost. She kind of floats. She wears these light blues and grays. She's almost translucent. Dr. Vollmer says she's a special case. And she has this blue vial around her neck, this vitamin vial that she takes as her special medicine. She doesn't drink the water. She takes the vitamins around her neck. A Cure for Wellness reminded me, did you see Martin Scorsese's Shutter Island starring Leo DiCaprio?
No, I never did catch up with that
one. I think it was very similar. It's also a psychological thriller where you don't know if what Leonardo DiCaprio is doing is really what he's doing. I like kind of movies like that, but the difference is Shutter Island wrapped it up, answered the question. A Cure for Wellness does not. We saw this movie with our buddy John Armstrong, and he took to this movie like I've never seen anyone take to it. In fact, he went to the university library, checked out some Thomas Mann biographies and old Atlantic Monthly articles from 1953, discovered a whole new genre of film I didn't even know existed, and said, no, you're not supposed to get answers because this is the genre of the film. And if you really want to dive into the metaphysics behind A Cure for Wellness, go look at Dr. Mathicus's website, John Armstrong, and read his review. I bet it's footnoted.
It probably is. And this is the type of movie that, I am sure there is some deep psychological allegory at play that smart people are supposed to catch on to, and the rest of us will just have to, just kind of throw up our arms and go, oh my God, this movie is just too weird. I don't get it. And so in the end, that's it. I don't really get it. It was not enjoyable for me on any level. It was the lead actor. I think you're right in some ways. Perhaps if it had been edited better, if it had been the narrative had been constructed a little more clearly, and if that last half hour weren't as completely icky as it is, and we're talking, there's like a little weird sort of torture scene thing going in, happening there.
If you remember Marathon Man and the teeth come back here, by the way.
And so it's just not my cup of tea at all. And so I'm thrilled that you liked it, that John liked it.
I didn't love it. John loved it.
He loved it.
I loved the first hour and a half.
And I suspect that people who kind of, Gore Verbinski's one of those quote-unquote visionary directors.
No, he directed Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. That is not visionary.
But okay, so
The Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger sucked. That was a really bad one. But so perhaps if you have a soft spot, though, for his artistic vision overall, or if you like a Shutter Island type of genre, then yeah, you might actually go for this one. But for the regular person who's just looking at all to be entertained, boy, this one was just, to me, not fun at all to watch.
Did you like how it looked? I loved how the sanitarium and the surrounding grounds looked. The psychological thrillers need two things. They need sound and they need design. The sound starts right in the opening credits, these high-pitched notes. And you hear the same thing every time you see Hannah again, these high-pitched notes. I never liked those. But the design, production designer Eve Stewart, 4 Oscar nominations. She think of The Danish Girl, how that looked. Think of The King's Speech. So same woman designing this. Looks like this really clean hospital. But as the movie goes on for another 5 hours, it looks dirtier and dirtier, but it's not. It just feels dirty. And I think that's her. I think that's her skill doing that.
Because you're not supposed to necessarily know where it's going at the beginning. And so
I don't know where it was going in the end.
I don't know where it was going in the end. But it definitely takes on a darker, it just kind of gets darker and twistier and stranger as it progresses. And so, sure, I mean, who's not going to appreciate this idea of this beautiful setting of this wellness center in the Swiss Alps, high on the hill where rich people go. And so establishing this environment, sure, it's beautiful. It's well-crafted. So it's what I would consider to be a well-crafted psychological thriller that nobody's going to enjoy.
That castle, by the way, they filmed it in southern Germany, is where that castle is. Castle Hohenzollern. And it's in Kaiser Wilhelm's family. Mm-hmm. Is the Kaiser, I guess, lived there off and on at times. Folks, that's all we have for this week. We have two films, the Matt Damon on the Great Wall, the Dane DeHaan getting his teeth knocked out in A Cure for Wellness.
And there may or may not be dry wine.
There may or may not be eels. I love the wine connection. You're welcome. Connecting stainless steel wine to stainless steel isolation tanks with eels in it, maybe. Yeah. I just want to know if the eels were in the isolation tank.
And we'll never know.
Oh, just tell me.
I'll tell you. The eels were in the isolation tank.
Whoa!
Spoiler alert. I don't know.
No, she doesn't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's pretty much our wrap up. I think I liked both movies better than you did.
You absolutely did. And if I had to pick one over another, I would pick The Great Wall. But I would pick almost anything else that's still out there that's worth seeing before the Oscars that are coming up in 2 weeks. So I would say you want to, or is it even just 1 week?
It's 2 weeks.
Right? 2 weeks?
February 26th. Yeah. That's 1 week. No, it's a week from Sunday.
It's a week from Sunday. So this is your last chance to see La La Land, Lion,
I have Monday figures. Off for President's Day. I'm a federal worker, so I have Monday off. So I'm going to go see the last film I haven't seen. Fences. I have yet to see Fences.
And so I'll be curious to see what you hear about Fences. And I finally saw The Lobster this week.
Loved it.
No.
Oh, come on.
So I can cross that one off the list and be like, well, it certainly would not have made my top 10. So I don't feel bad
not
about it.
Not even an original screenplay?
It's pretty darn original. It's original. See, so you talked about A Cure for Wellness. You're like, oh, there are no original movies out there. Well, the problem is these original ones just are not appealing to me.
What'd you like better, Cure for Wellness or The Lobster?
I think I like The Lobster better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
me too.
But I did not like either of them, but I like The Lobster better.
I believe you
so
didn't like
them. My recommendation is not to waste your time and money on either of these particular movies or the one that we both missed, which was Fist Fight.
We did not see actually probably the biggest film of the week, Charlie Day and Ice Cube face off in Fist Fight. Nor did we see the artier A United Kingdom starring David Oyelowo and Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
He's a king who marries an English commoner.
And you're a Rosamund Pike fan, aren't you?
She's awesome.
So maybe we'll catch up on that one later. But I don't think, Fist Fight looks to me just on the surface that it's one of those mindless entertainment movies that you can catch on a small screen or watch on an airplane.
Judging a book by its cover, Fist Fight looks like garbage.
but garbage that you might at least have a chuckle with. These movies you don't laugh at, these other movies here. So all of that aside, I don't think any of the new releases are going to be more valuable for your time or money heading into this long weekend than catching up on the Oscar nominations.
All right. Well, you got your work cut out for you, folks. The Wall or The Cure. So thank you very much for listening to The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.